Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Now you want the headphones up.
Yeah, I can't hear anything. Can you hear me?
Bill is high maintenance today.
Sounds like my mic is dead. There you go. That's better.
Yeah, we're back. We never test this ahead of time.
I know. What's
today's like the only day we've done it, and we did it wrong. It's better when we do it on the fly. All that planning and everything screwed up. So you can find everything about the program today and previous programs for the last, I don't know, I think 2010? Back to 2010?
2010.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Seems like we have
been a while.
I guess we've been doing this a while. You can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Back when Bill was getting his coffee.
That's right. That was the coffee boy.
Back when Bill was the coffee boy. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
The coffee boy.
And I'm Bob Martin.
He's not the coffee
boy. And we have Joe Gazzardi with us today.
And we also have a sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
We need to talk
Sorry, Joe. One more second.
We want to thank our sponsor for this hour.
No, you want those sponsors in there.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Powerhouse Solar. They'll do all your solar outfitting from heated pools to cooling your house. You name it, they'll put some electricity in your house for free. Okay. Well, the electricity will be free.
And today, while walking the dog, it was 85.
Yeah, it's going to get
hot.
What
the heck?
It's going to get hot. Those power bills are going to start going up, folks.
I know. Fort Jones, Thursday night was 38 degrees, and today it's 85.
Those days are over. Yeah, so give them a call over there at Powerhouse Solar, 530-275-5600, or get them on the web at powerhousesolar.com. Good folks to work with, been around a long time. They'll do you a great job.
There you go. So today we're talking about immigration. We're going to get an update from Joe Gazzardi, who's the National Media Director for Californians for Population Stabilization. It's CAPS, CAPS. And he's been doing this a long time. It says here you have 28 years of experience, but I stole that from last year's show. So I'm thinking that was probably old then.
Yeah, geez, it's been almost 30 years plugging it out on immigration.
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, you know, with everything that's going on nationally and in the state of California, and I mean, we have people who listen all over the place, but if you were going to look at the country and then zoom in on a place where immigration is a huge issue and you're going to pick one of the 50 states, I think I'd pick California.
Although I did hear the other day that
somebody else
when they were talking about the wall, that California was the state that really didn't need a wall.
Yeah, no, we don't need
Although I did talk to people that just came from San Diego, and I mean, they had people running down the street that looked like they just crossed the border on foot. So,
are you kidding?
No.
In San Diego?
No, sitting in a cafe, and there were people actually running by being chased by ICE. So, yeah, we don't need a wall.
So, Joe, just give us a little spoiler alert. Are we going to need blood pressure medication today?
Well, whenever you're talking about California and
that's true.
Immigration.
Or anything.
It's always, yes, it's blood pressure time for sure. But, you know, in the introduction, I was listening to you guys talking about your show having been on the air since 2010. And I tried to do a quick check of where the nation is, was in 2010, on immigration versus where it is today on immigration. And it's interesting because, you know, 2010, of course, Barack Obama was in his, second year. And as I recall, you know, immigration wasn't that big of a deal for him early on. He was all about getting his, Affordable Care Act passed, and he came apart on immigration totally in his second term. So, you know, we're better off with Trump, although I think it's safe to say that some of his early actions on immigration have been disappointing.
Well, I think, too, he's in office now, and he's learning that it's not as easy as it seemed from the outside looking in. He's getting an education.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt. And he's getting the predictable resistance from the congressional Democrats and the disappointing resistance from a lot of congressional Republicans. So it's hard for him to move forward. We all of us involved in common sense immigration goals are disappointed that he doesn't take on the easier tasks and insists on doing the things that are obviously going to be more challenging, like the wall. In other words, how about a full court press on E-Verify?
Yeah.
Or why did you cave without getting anything in return on DACA? And why would you go after the wall instead of either one of those two much easier to attain goals?
Well, I think the wall was a big issue because he talked so much about that during the campaign. I think
maybe he was feeling
some heat there that he needs to keep that on the front burner, don't you think?
No doubt. I mean, no doubt. He did talk about that incessantly during the campaign. But what I get back to then is kind of, well, okay, we're in a little bit of a holding pattern on the wall, because that's what he's wanting you to believe, that he can make some advances later on in the year or in the new fiscal year. But I can't deliver the wall to you right now, but I can deliver for you on DACA. So I got rid of DACA. There aren't going to be any more work permits issued. There aren't going to be any renewals of the existing work permits. And we're in full court press mode on E-Verify, which is going to ensure that only American citizens and legal permanent residents get jobs. So on DACA, he caved in completely. And I haven't heard a peep out of E-Verify in I don't know how long.
How hard did that be to do? I mean, just...
Oh, my God, that's easy. I mean, that is really easy because, first of all, E-Verify has already passed the House Judiciary Committee twice.
Okay.
Not since Trump was a president, but in the houses that were controlled by John Boehner and Paul Ryan, E-Verify passed on two separate occasions. So what E-Verify... Once it gets through the Judiciary Committee and once it gets through the full House, which it certainly would, then if the Democrats want to shoot it down, they're forced into a position where they have to say, well, as far as we're concerned, whether illegal immigrants get jobs or American citizens get jobs, it doesn't matter to us. We're okay with it. Now, you know, that's an untenable position, especially as the 2018 midterm elections come up, and where there are 10 senators that will be up for a re-election in states that Trump won by 10 or more points. So, Aaron, to answer your question, that would be something that is easily done, or at least easy compared to some of the other things that Trump has said he wants to get done.
And I get the idea. I mean, I understand the concept of E-Verify. For those people who don't, or who, you know, don't live in the U.S. or whatever that are listening, can you give them sort of a thumbnail sketch on E-Verify? And let me check real quick. Bob, are we up for a break at this point?
Sorry, we can take one anytime, yes.
All righty. You know what, Joe? Let's take a real quick break here. And then when we come back, maybe you could do sort of a thumbnail sketch on E-Verify, because I think it's important people understand what it is, what it isn't.
Good idea.
And how it works.
Good. Yeah, and also from the employer standpoint, what qualifications they have to submit to.
Yeah, do they have to buy machinery or equipment? Do they have to have a special reader? Anyway.
All right, good idea.
Okay, so we'll do E-Verify 101 when we come right back. We're here with Joe Gazzardi today from CAPS, the Californians for Population Stabilization.
Easy for you to say.
I thought I was going to start coughing. I almost choked on CAPS. That's bad.
That is bad.
That's bad.
Hopefully not bottle caps.
No, so we'll be right back with Joe. Going to learn all about immigration today.
Soul, then it's just your body, then they go, read the writing on the wall.
What wall?
Today is a sunny day, though. Got
it
that
is.
Part right.
It is. Got that part right.
It was a long time ago, too. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining We the People. We're on here with Joe Gazzardi. And, you know, Joe, I was looking at it. You were on here April 17th of last year.
You're our, almost a year exactly.
Yeah, I know. I looked that up. I was like, you're our annual April guest. A lot has happened in a year, though. Wow. So what's the skinny on this E-Verify deal?
All right. Well, it's a great question, and I can give you a simple answer from my own firsthand knowledge. I am an E-Verified employee. So the way that it works is that within 3 days of an employee being hired, you have to be hired. Before an E-Verify application can be processed. So within 3 days, you submit to your employer all of your data, all of your I-9 information, and that data is cross-checked against Social Security records and Department of Homeland Security records. So it verifies whether or not the Social Security number is valid, or whether or not there might be any immigration holds or anything of that, anything immigration related on the applicant. Now, the reason there's a 3-day hold, the reason that you must be employed first is because the people who wrote the E-Verify legislation didn't want anybody to claim that there was a bias in the hiring process and that they were discriminating against Hispanics or blacks or anything like that to deny minorities a job. So first you're hired, then you go through the E-Verify check. My background check took less than 3 minutes. It was done by a person already on the staff. There's no need for employers to go out and hire new people. It's accomplished in a matter of minutes. In fact, your listeners can go on to the E-Verify website at any time and do their own self-check just to see whether or not, just to see how long it takes, I should say, how little time it takes. And also, it's not a bad idea to do it in case there's any misinformation on your applications. You can get it cleared up before you're actually E-Verified after being hired.
Okay, so the question that immediately pops up in my mind, Joe, is I'm an employer. I hire somebody. They fill out their paperwork, give it to me. I send it in. Now, you said it gets cross-checked with Social Security. Lots of folks in this country have phony Social Security numbers that are good numbers, but they're not, I guess, legal Social Security folks.
Right.
And the second thing is Homeland Security. Well, if you ran my name against Homeland Security, I doubt if anything would come up. And if somebody
you don't know that.
Well, if somebody jumps the border, I guess if they overstay a work visa, they're going to pop up maybe in Homeland Security if they cross, verify
records. Well, that should pop up, definitely. Yeah.
Okay,
definitely.
Well, what if I don't have a work visa? What if I came here illegally? I got a phony Social Security number. It's not going to come up on Homeland Security check.
In California.
Well, what would come up is that your name would not be attached to that Social Security number.
Yeah. If you actually.
So that's how you would be ferreted out. You say, well, listen, you're telling me that your name is such and such, but this Social Security number belongs to somebody else.
But aren't they getting Social Security numbers with their own name on them, though? Aren't they actually applying for Social Security numbers? I don't know what the system is, but can an illegal get a Social Security number?
Legal. No.
No.
They can't.
Uh-uh. You have to steal somebody else.
And so if they illegally obtain a Social Security number, that number isn't attached to their name?
Well, that, you know, that's where the checking comes in. The name has to correspond with the number. So either, I mean, if the number is completely bogus and therefore not in the Social Security system,
yeah, that's
then
gonna
that's
pop
the first
up.
Red flag.
Okay. All right.
And this is all
the,
something.
And if the name doesn't, you know, if the reverse is true with the fake name that's not attached to the to a valid Social Security number, then that's also a red flag.
So they, what if they steal somebody's Social Security number and use that name on their application?
Well, then there would be further checks. That would trigger a response from the employer, a red flag from the system that would cause a further check to be generated by the E-Verify people.
Right, because Social Security is not the only thing you have to provide when you go to look for work. And the driver's licenses, tell me, I know in California they started giving illegal aliens driver's licenses, but are they, like people under 21, are the license, do they look different? Do they have a marking on them?
The driver's licenses in California have a very tiny marking on them that indicate that they are not for federal purposes such as work, entering federal buildings or for employment purposes or for boarding airlines. But there's been quite a bit of dispute about just how rigorous the checking for those restrictions actually are. But technically, those driver's licenses are for driving only.
But if they ran that through E-Verify, that would pop up. We would think that DMV would have kept a record that.
Well, yeah, that
they
was
were
another question
citizens.
I had. Do other government agencies? I mean, are they now, cross-checking information with, say, Homeland Security runs a check? Are they? Do they have access to, you know, like the FBI, NSA? California, like state records? I mean, does any of that come into play, or is it just...
Well, E-Verify wouldn't get into... I mean, FBI doesn't have a role in E-Verify at all.
Okay.
So
you're asking if there's other... The only agencies that are involved in E-Verify and in work authorization verification are Social Security and the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
So an employer can do that using the web. They don't need a special machine or have special cards.
It's all on the web, and it's all free, and it's been extremely popular and efficient. It's been efficient both in the sense of when people are confirmed. I think the automatically confirmed rate is about close to 99%. But it's also been effective in the sense that a lot of people who know they can't get through an E-Verify check don't apply for work. Mm. So if an employer says,
sure.
Look, I'm an E-Verified employer. I mean, Costco, just to take an example that everybody knows. Costco's an E-Verified employer. So if you're thinking about working for Costco and you know that they're going to E-Verify you, it's very unlikely that you're going to apply there.
Okay. Now, what is the... as an employer, what am I required or mandated to do if, I heard that they have, you have to give them access to your employment records or your payroll records or some, if they're checking up, if you're an E-Verify employer, do you have to, hand over those records to Homeland Security?
You mean,
or
like there might be some kind of an investigation of your own record keeping or something
yes.
of that nature?
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of at all, no.
Okay.
No.
So there's no... Early
on in E-Verify, there was a lot of misinformation about there because the activists on the other side were, they were very worried about mandatory E-Verify, so they came out with a lot of arguments about how you would have to hire several new employees and how complex it was and how costly it was and how racist it was and so on and so forth. So certainly it's possible that one of the arguments that they made was, hey, once you sign up for E-Verify, IRS is going to be all over you for your past work record, the past records of your employees. But that just isn't the case at all.
Okay. No, and there's some really, I don't spend a lot of time looking at this sort of thing. So I went to the E-Verify website, and there's a really good Q&A section. They've got information for employers, employees. So
if E-Verify becomes law, then all employers would be required to use the E-Verify system? Is that
another great question? There have been in the various years that E-Verify has been kicked around and rewritten and so forth, what has come up is different versions, one of which included, for example, all employers are going to have to use it, and you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to implement it within 2 years. But then there was another version that said, okay, all employers, unless you're in the agriculture industry, we'll cut you a little extra break, and we'll make your timeline 3 years. And then there was a version that came out which said, okay, well, we're going to make E-Verify mandatory for new hires. And then somebody else suggested, well, as long as we're going through all the trouble, let's require that all existing employees have to go through E-Verify, and if it's found out that you're not legally authorized to work, you would be subject to losing your job. I mean, according to the Pew Hispanic Center, there's like 8 million illegal immigrants employed in non-agriculture jobs.
Right.
So somebody in Congress, I can't remember who it was, said, well, wait a minute, if we're going to be doing E-Verify, why don't we make it wider reaching?
Okay, so that was really kind of where I was going with this is, okay, so if they require employers to use E-Verify, and I'm a farmer. I got thousands of acres, and I hire a lot of manual labor. And I don't want to E-Verify these guys because I know they're not going to pass.
Right.
How is that enforced?
Well, I think that was the idea behind a more generous system for people in the agriculture business. What they're going to say is, okay, you've got 3 years to figure out what your recruiting needs are and how to go about it. I mean, 3 years in the corporate world to do your forecasting and your planning for your
right.
manpower needs.
Yeah, I get that part, but what I'm saying is, you've got folks out there that are saying, I'm never going to E-Verify. I don't care if they do make it a law. I'm not going to do it. How is does the government then going to have the right to come onto your site and say, hey, have all these people been E-Verified? And if so, show me. I mean,
you have to have that paperwork.
The government definitely would have the right to do it, and there have been incidents.
There have been incidents where they have...
There have been moments of silence.
Yes.
The cone
of silence just fell down. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. So now the government does have the right to come in.
No, it's the same as it is now. You can't just... You have to fill out all that paperwork when you start a job. Well, there's a reason for that. You don't get to just willy-nilly do whatever you want.
I mean,
There
are other things that the ag people could do. For one thing, there's a existing visa, the H-2B visa, which allows agricultural workers to come into the United States legally.
Right.
There's that.
Sure.
There's the possibility that the farmers, instead of insisting that they have to have more cheap labor every single year, might begin to more seriously explore mechanization. That's an option, too. So,
well, that Pew study, if we're talking about the same one, that Pew study showed that only 4% of illegal immigrants work in forestry, farming, and mining.
That was surprising.
I was super surprised, and that was a really, really detailed.
It was surprising to some people, but when you've been studying immigration for 30 years.
Yeah.
It wasn't overwhelming.
I think the public conception is there's a lot of illegal workers in ag.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, let's talk a little bit more about some of these situations where the farmers want more illegal immigrant labor, and then they come, let's say, to California, and once they get settled into California, they're not going to go home. You know, in California,
sure, yeah,
they've got
absolutely.
Education, which all of the other states do, but they've got education. They can get driver's licenses. They
right.
Have the
there's no incentive to... There's no incentive to return. We need to take a really quick break, and we'll be...
And then they stick around, and...
Let's hit this on the other side of the break, Joe.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll have all the breaks at the top of the hour, which...
Okay.
So terrible. Anyway, we're talking to Joe Gazzardi. Obviously, there is a lot going on in the land of immigration, regardless of where you live. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I worked on a huge ranch down in the valley that employed, 150 people. And there was a fairly large contingent of illegal workers. I mean, everybody did it. And immigration would come around. And I don't know how they did it, but they had a network. They'd get within 5 miles of that ranch, and it would turn into a ghost town. It's like, where'd everybody go? And then you'd see a green truck pull in the driveway, and you'd know where everybody went. It was really kind of funny. But, yeah, it was common. It was common knowledge.
And that was, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, it was back, I'm going to say,
yeah,
late
years.
70s, early Ooh. 80s. Yeah.
Feels a lot older than I thought.
Yeah, back in the day, we had the mules.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I think those were also back in the days when illegal immigrants from Mexico were transferred all the way back to the southern extent of the southern border of Mexico with Guatemala to make it much more difficult for them to cross over again.
I don't know. We had one fella. He was a great guy. Everybody loved this kid. And he was so busy clowning around all the time, he always got picked up. He didn't pay attention. And he held the record for getting back to work. And he got deported one time and was back to work in 3 days. That's how quickly he got back across the border. So it wasn't, and maybe back then it really wasn't patrolled like it is today, but it wasn't a problem going back and forth. In fact, they would intentionally get picked up around Christmas time when we shut down so they get a free trip back to home and spend Christmas with the holiday and with the family, and then they come back to work. It was very
creative.
Oh, it was.
So
it
for
was.
All the people who think immigration just became a problem, yeah.
Oh no, and it wasn't
for
a problem.
The border, I should say.
I mean, we depended on those folks. I mean, they were hard workers, and we needed them.
Right.
You know, so it was.
We
kind
didn't
of a
have all
world.
The extra bonus stuff we get now.
No.
Well, that's exactly right. If you look back over the from the time that Ronald Reagan's Immigration Reform and Control Act passed in 1986, there has really only been token enforcement of the immigration laws over those 30 years. And it came completely off the wheels in Obama's second term when virtually anything was accepted. Unaccompanied minors, prosecutorial discretion, DACA, more work-authorized, employment-based visas. And it just is at a point where really if Jeff Sessions hadn't come along and at least posed the threat of deporting people and have, you know, actually with some of these recent raids that have arrested dozens of people in L.A. and Houston and various other spots across the United States, it would still be going on. So now crossings, illegal crossings are down, depending upon who you listen to, maybe 40, 50, 60%.
Yeah, I heard the other day that it was like 76%. You know, 76% seemed like a pretty big number, but they said it was down that much just since Trump took office.
Yeah.
Could that be correct?
Right. So the message is from Sessions, and I guess more indirectly from Donald Trump, that look, we're going to enforce immigration laws. That is one thing that Trump does seem to be committed to, and you know, Sessions, I think on Thursday or on Friday, came out and said, in response to some statement about how ICE was picking up people that weren't guilty of any serious crimes and so on and so forth, Sessions said, look, if you're in the United States illegally, you are subject to deportation, period.
You know, period.
He didn't elaborate on it. He didn't give a long list of exceptions from that rule. He just said very simply, look, if you're in the United States illegally, you are subject to deportation. So that message gets to Mexico, gets to Central America, maybe beyond. That's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because at this point, the DACA thing, deferred action for childhood arrivals. So those are kids who were brought here by parents who were coming here illegally.
Allegedly kids.
I think it went up to like
19 or something.
But I mean, that's what it's supposed to stand for. They aren't kids who came here by themselves most of the time. The ideological side says that their parents came here for a better life. They brought their kids and now the kids are here and they've grown up here. So what are we supposed to do with them? But in reality, we know that was abused by, obviously like anything else. Have you heard anything about what the plan is for that? Because those people are still here illegally.
The short term is very clear. Trump has said that he's not planning to do anything to change DACA, which in my mind means that, okay, this is an amnesty that President Obama originated, but that you, Donald Trump, now own. Because he could end DACA in less than 60 seconds. He picks up a pen, he writes a memorandum to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services and says, effective immediately, do not accept any more DACA applications, and effective immediately, do not process any more renewals. So he chose not to do that, and it looks like for at least the short term, they're going to keep on accepting new applications, which I think are something like 500 or 600 a week, something like that.
Wow!
But the bottom line,
process the renewals.
Right.
You know, those are work permits. That's 500 or 600 work permits every week that's going out to some person, which is going to enable him to enter the labor market and compete against U.S. citizens for an increasingly smaller number, lesser number of jobs. So I'd like to elaborate just a little bit on DACA in case your listeners don't have a complete picture of what happened. First of all, there was no face-to-face interviews for a DACA applicant. They submitted their applications. They were not subject to review. Nothing on the application was cross-checked. If a kid said, for example, that he went to high school in Los Angeles and has a diploma, nobody checked. If he said that he has a GED, nobody double-checked that. DACA applicants were allowed to have as many as three felonies on their record and still qualify.
What?
And a lot of those felonies had been pled down. I'm sorry, three misdemeanors.
But are they listing those felonies on their application?
Misdemeanors?
No. Yeah, right. No. So somebody is actually looking at the applications and seeing that there is a criminal record.
They were allowed to list as many as three misdemeanors.
Okay.
They could still qualify for DACA with as many as three misdemeanors on their record. So
okay.
That, if it was checked, was okay. But the question is, were the misdemeanors true misdemeanors, or were they crimes that had been pled down from felonies?
Right.
So there's that. And more to the point, almost, or as egregious as any of the things that I just said, if they worked, if any of these DACA holders had worked at any time in their lives in the United States, they were almost certainly guilty of identity theft because they had to have listed fake Social Security numbers.
Right.
So,
yeah, see, that's the part I don't understand is if they've been here for 20 years and, you know, they got an education and now they're working for some corporation and making $100,000 a year, how's that happen if they were illegal? They would have submitted false information at some point, correct?
Absolutely. I don't know whether you guys happen to catch this episode or not, but a few nights ago, early last week, Tucker Carlson interviewed a young woman.
Yes.
Who is an employee at Goldman Sachs.
Yes, I saw that interview.
The big-time investment banking firm. Apparently made several hundred thousand dollars a year. You know, he asked her, he said, well, did you, how did you get this job? What about your Social Security number? And she said, well, I used a random Social Security number. I didn't steal it from anybody. Well, she doesn't really know whether it happened to have been somebody else's active Social Security number or not. But even giving her the benefit of the doubt, and saying, okay, you used a random number that didn't belong to anybody else. It's a felony to falsify an application.
Well, wouldn't that have popped up as a bad number if anybody checked it?
Well, if they checked, it would. But,
yeah.
You know, that's really what we're talking about. Goldman Sachs, I'm going to guess now, they probably thought, you know, this is going to be great. We're going to have a more diverse workforce. Young woman from Mexico, looks like she's got... I believe went to the University of Texas, so she graduated from there.
Oh, very well-spoken young lady, yeah. I saw that interview,
and
I thought, well, there's a classic example of somebody who came as a child and is now an adult, you know, holding down a really good job, but is still illegal.
Well, at the end
exactly. And the point is that employers like Goldman Sachs and God knows how many others across the United States – oh, well, you know, okay, a little identity fraud. But that's, you know, that's a huge crime. And if you have stolen somebody's identity and if you know anybody who's been a victim of identity theft, it's a terrible thing.
Well, besides that, I'm sorry, but people are working really hard to put their kids through college so that they can find, you know, decent jobs and support themselves, and there's one they're not going
right.
to get.
But what do you do?
I mean,
what do you do
crazy.
With somebody like that? I mean,
okay,
who's not a criminal? She ended up marrying an American citizen, and now she's a citizen. But, you know, what do you do? That's got to happen
news
a lot.
On that one.
Yeah.
All right, quick break, and then we'll be right back with Joe Gazzardi, and we're going to find out what can happen on that. Because now we're all mad. Okay, so we need 2 minutes. No coffee on the break, anybody.
Yeah, because I should have gone to work
for Goldman Sachs.
Coffee's not going to help
you. Coffee's not your friend today.
You're listening
to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Hey, you're pushing the button, Bob.
Yeah, Bob, you missed the button there.
You're as cold as ice. You're willing to sacrifice our love. Yeah.
much. You got a juicy job at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. That's all right.
This is the other side of the Tucker Carlson show. So, Joe, I was looking at your article on Trump's immigration policy, and let's see, the first quarter of fiscal year 2017, there were 114,327 new applications and renewals filed through the DACA program.
Okay.
So, that's a ton of people, and your article goes on to say between today and the end of 2019's first quarter, 750,000 DACA renewals will come due. What the heck? So this isn't like, you know.
Yeah, this is just a few folks.
This isn't just a few people that got caught in the...
Again, I mean, you have to look at this in terms of jobs. These are, we describe it as DACA permits being renewed, but really what they are is work permits. These are individuals who are now going to be authorized to work in the United States and are going to be able to compete with American kids and American workers and underemployed workers and the whole spectrum of people that are citizens that are trying to improve their lives. So
it's a terrible
failure on Trump's part.
Well, do you have any numbers on how many of those jobs? Because what I hear a lot is, well, these folks are all coming over here. They're working in the service industry. They're doing jobs that nobody wants to do over here.
Sure. And that's partially true, no doubt about it. But some of those service jobs would be really fantastic for homemaker who wants to increase the family income while the kids are away at school, work a few shifts at a restaurant, or people who are you leave California and you go to out in the Midwest and you stay at a hotel or a motel.
Right.
The people that are employed there as housekeepers, overwhelmingly Americans, right? So.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, because that's not the case here.
No, it's not the case here, but it is the case. It is the case elsewhere. So
interesting.
People, when you're hearing about DACA permits and DACA renewals, just remember that every single one of those is an employment authorization document, which means that this person who got from President Obama an illegal amnesty, really, protected from deportation and authorized to work as a, as a resident of as a legal resident of any of the 50 states can get a driver's license. So people need to realize that this is not some great act of compassion by Donald Trump. This is a direct assault on American workers. He's expanding the labor force, making it tougher for citizens to get jobs.
And right. It's not this 100-some thousand folks that got reauthorized to work doesn't mean that there were 100,000 jobs taken, because all of them aren't working, obviously.
No, they're not all working.
Right.
And if you're if you're like under this DACA renewal, could you be 10 years old? I mean, is that for like little kids too, or is that only for like
old? I'm not sure what the work laws are.
I hadn't really thought about it, but the DACA thing, I'm like, well, what about
underage
little kids that are here?
That could qualify for DACA,
by the way,
not necessarily.
Curious.
On the question of who's working and where they might be working, a few weeks ago, I had a call from a reporter who writes for Inc. magazine, I-N-C magazine.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
And the magazine covers developments in Silicon Valley, the latest happenings there, and he told me that a lot of these Silicon Valley guys are all worried. They were worried at that time about President Trump ending DACA. So not all of the DACA holders are in the service industry. Some of them are working in Silicon Valley at what are probably pretty good jobs.
Yeah, well, that Pew survey makes it really clear. The percentages were very striking, that they were working in professional positions and management positions in this country.
And just to return briefly to, I don't want to backtrack too much, but to get back to E-Verify, if Tucker Carlson's guest, Julissa, whatever her last name was, I can't remember, but if E-Verify had been in place when she went to apply at Goldman Sachs, she wouldn't have been working there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I heard, too, that a lot of the Silicon Valley folks are actually recruiting people to come over and signing them up under the DACA program to work. So, again, it's not just folks coming here looking for work. I mean,
who were little kids brought with their parents.
Right.
You know, and all this, at the end of the day, I mean, I can hear people in the background saying, oh, well, we have to have compassion. We're all immigrants and all that. Let's hit a little of that when we come back, Joe, and let's talk a little bit about what's really going on, because that argument is way too loud, I think, in the arena.
Okay.
Alrighty. So you're listening to We the People Radio. You can find all of our information, sponsorship, how to contact us, shows, all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.